Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that's biding its time. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
That is a terrible, terrible pun.
And as promised, to discuss Super Tuesday, we've got our man in New York, Patrick. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Corey and Steve. How are we?
Cold.
Pretty good, actually. Yeah. Better than Bernie Sanders is right now, I suspect.
Yeah.
And Bloomberg, Warren, and Klobuchar, and they've been dropping like flies.
Yeah, well, because we spoke last, Patrick, about a couple of weeks ago, and there were about seven, I think, or eight potential nominees, and now it looks like it's just down to Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, I suppose.
And one non-potential nominee in Tulsi Gabbard.
I was about to make a crack about that. That's true.
Well, there could be a broken convention. My fun stat about Mike Bloomberg is he spent $500 million, and when I checked the results this morning, he'd received 1.7 million votes on Super Tuesday, and that works out at $294 a vote.
I have another fun stat. He got 44 delegates, and that breaks down to roughly $11.36 million per delegate.
He spent $500 million, but he's worth $60 billion, so it's the equivalent of if someone was worth $100,000 spending $400 of their own money on the campaign. I'd never really quite appreciated just how much a billion was.
That's
all, man. Yeah. Also, one other Bloomberg thing. When he was mayor of New York, he used to do, like, a snowstorm was coming, a hurricane. They put on these vests and they stand in front and give a press conference with all the various emergency response chiefs behind him. Bloomberg used to do it in English, and then, because he knew Spanish, would redo the whole thing in Spanish instead of a Spanish speaker. So there is a Twitter handle called El Bloombito that kind of does fake things he may say, like, Nuevo York going to get hit by mucho snow. Take cover, oh. It is very funny because as you watch these ones on there, like, just have a real Spanish speaker do it because he never sounded great.
We should probably talk about Super Tuesday because a whole load of malarkey went down. So we are going to think about what themes are going to dominate the next week and the next months of this race. So if we start this episode then talking about themes rather than candidates, first theme we can talk about is electability. So what it seems like has happened. So we're recording this on Wednesday. By Sunday, there might be more votes in from California, places like that. But what it seems like has happened is that the centre-left of the Democratic Party, both centre-left candidates like Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar and centre-left voters as well, are starting to coalesce around Joe Biden. Does this make him unstoppable now?
I think you can make a case for that. I think that there's two things that Biden got out of Super Tuesday. He's going to have all the money he's going to need to run his campaigns. He's also able to, you know, he won Massachusetts where he never visited. He did really well in California where he had one field outfit open. He used momentum and earned media to get into where he is. He is much stronger. Coalescing the center left around one person is big. Now that Bloomberg has dropped out, decision of how Bloomberg does his money while endorsing Biden could help him fund what he needs. But I think he is going to be hard to beat. But we are moving to slightly different. We're moving off of firm ground for Biden. We're moving to remaining states with large populations, so large number of delegates in terms of Democratic delegates, that are not as heavily African-American as the Deep South is. And so that puts him on it's going to be tricky, but now that you have you're going to have two major candidates right now as it sits, and again, it could change, as you said, roughly 80 delegate lead, but we are moving into, they're going to be talking better about him, but also it's Joe Biden. He could say a lot of bad things in a previous of a week. He's genuine, but he also kind of speaks his mind, and sometimes that's not the greatest thing. But he, right now, as it sits, I'd say he's unstoppable. It's good. There's it's going to be a tough road for Bernie in terms of, like, example of Florida's coming up, and that's 200 and some delegates, 219, I think. And that is overwhelmingly older, which is going to be center left and most likely going to vote for Biden on those things. Yeah, I think you can make the case for he's unstoppable. But there is reason for hope if you're Sanders. If Sanders takes what happened yesterday and changes his message, there's a possibility. But your odds on favorites would probably be Biden at this point.
Which is kind of odd when you consider, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were, well, one of the reasons everybody was talking about Bloomberg was because Biden was nowhere. And then Bloomberg's, like, crashed and burned spectacularly, wasting half a billion of money for not very much return. And suddenly everybody else has dropped out, and good old Joe is back in the frame as the front runner.
And it does seem to be almost a huge part of it because of people deciding late who they were going to vote for and then voting for Biden. I can't remember the stat offhand, but it's something like the vast majority of those who decided they were going to vote, how they were going to vote in the final 24 hours, broke for Biden, which I'm guessing is why he's won places like Massachusetts. And it's interesting, it is just on name recognition alone, I suppose. You got two candidates who were really well known at the start
and from different wings of the party.
And now they are, it's going to be one of those two, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, I think the other thing too, and I thought this was a crazy stat. I was watching MSNBC, or as Donald Trump calls it, MSDNC. They said the early voting in a lot of these states, which had changed, a lot of these had changed their rules from 2016. A lot of people held their ballots to the last minute, much lower voter early voting than we thought. A lot of people made their minds up in the last, like I said, like a third of it made up their mind in the last 3 days, which is interesting. If South Carolina wasn't this incredible rise for Biden, what would have happened? But I think it's really interesting how many people waited to vote to the last minute that would have voted early in previous contests.
Did you reckon that's kind of like a symptom of the fact that actually going into this primary, there was no strong favorite? And as the primaries and caucuses have kind of, you know, gotten underway, there still hasn't necessarily been a massive favourite up until basically everything's coalesced around Sanders and Biden. So people have then just kind of been waiting and seeing.
I think so. And I actually think that's like healthy to have it like five candidates that all look pretty competent and for other reasons in making decisions late. It means like you can, as your candidate, you can actually change somebody's mind going close to one. But I think... But yeah, I really think there wasn't a strong favorite. I think you would put the at the time you were putting Sanders kind of as his supposed favorite, but Sanders wasn't really treating as it if he was the odds-on favorite. I don't think anybody really, nobody else could say. Buttigieg said he could, and Biden to a point. Biden even I don't think he was a favorite, and he was betting huge on South Carolina, and it worked out in his favor. He, you know, was right, but yeah, I don't think there really was an odds-on favorite. There's five people that could have done all well.
And in South Carolina, what seems to have been interesting, well, in South Carolina as well, is Biden's first primary win in 30 years of trying to run for president. But what seems to have really tipped the balance there is an endorsement by Jim Clyburn, I think, who's a very influential African-American member of Congress. And according to some of the exit polls, I think it's something like 49% of those who voted said that they voted how they did because of his endorsement of Joe Biden.
That was huge. It was huge. He got a couple of really good endorsements in Virginia on Monday that helped him a lot, too, I think. But Virginia was a shock, complete shock on how well he did there.
It says a lot about campaigning, I think, this primary. If I was a campaign manager, I just want to tear up lots of plans.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen with this is actually that, you know, the notion that you can just buy an election, that's not a thing. Like Bloomberg threw all the money in the world at it, didn't make a blind bit of difference really to his performance.
And they said that was one of the biggest. They were saying that was one of the biggest deciders. Was they didn't want to vote for Biden, vote for Bloomberg. Just too many B's. Bloomberg, because they didn't want him to buy an election. And his, like, and I think it was in Virginia, I think his net unfavorability was 58, and North Carolina it was like 60.
I do wonder if maybe Biden's been assisted somewhat by Bloomberg's presence in the primaries, though, by virtue of there being somebody even more establishment than Joe Biden running for it, who's a literal billionaire, who's throwing money at things willy nilly. Does that just make Biden look a little less, establishment, a little bit more appealing in comparison? So people have just kind of maybe gravitated to him a little bit more, and that kind of folksy charm has come through in comparison to someone like Bloomberg.
Yes, and I also think that was, I mean, Elizabeth Warren destroyed him at the last debate. I think there was also one that there was that he was spending all this money and expected to do well. So almost all of the discussions were not about why isn't Biden doing better? Is his campaign done? I think he also benefited from kind of the heat being on Bloomberg. Definitely helped them. Because I wonder if Bloomberg wasn't in the race, whether there'd be like, is Joe Biden really fit for the presidency? You know, I know he's betting big on South Carolina, but is he really the choice that we should have for the one? Can he beat Trump? And I don't think he really got a lot of these internal Democratic hit pieces, for lack of a better term, on him that otherwise he would have if Bloomberg wasn't in there. But I think also being a billionaire and more of establishment and being a former Republican turned Democrat definitely helped. It definitely helped create the bigger concern being Bloomberg and not Biden.
So, second theme wanted to talk about was division. We've seen quite a lot of division in the Democratic debates, and I will be very, very shocked if some of the Republican adverts don't show footage from the debate of all eight of them talking over each other and shouting and putting hands in the air and all this kind of stuff. But I wonder, just in the shorter term, is the biggest danger at the moment for the Democrats a divisive primary, one that drags onto the convention in July?
Short answer, yes. Longer answer, I think it's there's two schools of thought. Do you want all of your dirty laundry and all your negative stuff to come out during the Democratic primary so there's nothing that can be released later on in the general election by your opponent, which is possible. But I think your point being that this is all going to most likely be in Trump ads or someone of all these things they've said and talking over, and absolutely. But there's the theory of 2016 in terms of Republicans that the Democrats did not coalesce around, Republicans not coalesce one, everything that Trump was just going to fall off and they could take on his voters. So they didn't really challenge Trump because they didn't really think that he was going to end up getting the nomination, that they didn't really go dirty on Trump. And it probably, it helped them at the end of the day. Well, you never know because he actually ended up winning it. But I think there's questions we had whether this fight of this early is a good move. I just don't think a contested convention is the worst of the things that could happen, because if the Bernie voters, that the superdelegates end up breaking in favor of Biden at the convention after there's no clear winner after the first ballot, is going to leave a really, really bad taste in a lot of swing Democratic voters that may just not vote. And I think that's it's a big concern.
I mean, given the kind of concern around that sort of stuff and kind of like throwing potentially the DNC kind of like trying to manipulate the second round of voting into, getting Biden in, is it possible that you end up with maybe actually just through the vagaries of the convention system, neither of them getting the nomination, and you end up with something like, I don't know, just off the top of my head, somehow Elizabeth Warren coming through actually as a compromise candidate, where the DNC can go, she is a Democrat, she's caucused with us for ages, she's true blue in that sense. And also the progressive side of the Democrats can go, well, yes, she's not Bernie, but she's as close as you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it was like the 1924 convention or something where they went through like 9 or 10 ballots and they ended up saying who wants it or something along the lines of that. I think so. I think it would be interesting to see. But like, The other thing about the divisiveness is the positive side to it would be that all of your messages and all of your plans are tested more than if it was just the Hillary Clinton's a good example of it. Her plans really weren't tested against the holes and were objectively pretty well attacked by the Republicans in general. So there's a part to that, but picking someone that's not one of the most delegates or even close to first or second delegates, it absolutely would make it be like Christmas in July for the Republicans.
The issue with the division isn't necessarily that they won't attack Trump, because I think this time Trump will be the focus, I think, of Democrat attack. Now that he's obviously a very clear and present danger, I think it's more, we talked about this a little bit, actually. We're going to have a Patreon episode coming out on Can Bernie Sanders Beat Donald Trump, if you want to give us some money. I'll listen to that. And it's this idea that the Democratic Party is a big coalition of lots of different groups. And so you need your moderate, centrist, union Democrats to turn out, as well as your younger, Latino, left-wing, environmentalist Democrats. And I think the problem, from my perspective, might be the longer this race goes on, the more likely it is that you're going to end up with Sanders people saying they're not going to vote for Biden, or equally, I can see this, if Sanders is the nominee, putting off more centrist Democrats as well. And so, given that no one's really playing for a small group of independents anymore, it's basically you've got your chunk of Republican voters, your chunk of Democrat voters, and it's about who can turn out their vote best. If there's a divided party and you've got a group of Democrats who don't feel invested in the nominee, I think that's a massive, massive issue.
It really is. That's the thing, is that I think we've talked about this in previous episodes, but apathy cannot happen for Democrats if they're going to win. Because the thing about it, more than anything, is that you have down ballot races. They have to flip the Senate. The question to ask yourself is whether Biden or Sanders can do that, because they both have big negative. My father's one of registered Democrat, but feels that Biden doesn't feel that maybe his brain is as strong as it was before. The faux pas and stuff, and whether he is fit to be president. I don't know, but I think both have the same issues, whether they can bring the coalition along, because the coalition has to come along and has got to come in large numbers, and especially the battleground states. It's not going to be an easy task for the Democrats. Do I think we can do it? Absolutely. There's not a stronger campaign organization out there than Democrats in terms of their field techniques and their reach and what they're able to do and organizing ability. But it's a tough. It's not. They have to present a message and policy platform and optimistic outlook of the world that is not surrounded by just Trump is really bad, why would you vote for? And I think that's one of the things, is they have to talk about their issues and why they're making country, and maybe not talk about Trump. You'll have time to talk how bad Trump is in general election. At the end of the day, it doesn't bring more voters into the fold. And, you know, not everybody has a negative outlook on Trump as Democratic primary voters. Plain and simple.
No, I suppose a lot of it probably depends on the VP pick as well, but let's not speculate about that yet. Final theme wanted to talk about, because it's a big theme in British politics as well at the moment, is age. So the results that have come out from Super Tuesday suggests that younger voters are going to Bernie Sanders, and older voters, so especially those aged 45 to 64, apologies to any 45-year-old listeners, but 45 to 64 and 65 and over, going very heavily for Joe Biden, particularly, as you've said, African-Americans aged over 65. Why do you think that is the case?
I don't really know. And I wonder if it's the older voters being more close to what they call JFK Democrats and Lyndon B. Johnson Democrats, grew up with, you know, incremental change of Medicaid and Medicare. Or is it just more along the way of just the way that, you know, the old kind of thing that most older Americans have is the viewpoint that you can, you know, you you can become rich. You can, you know, if you work hard enough and do it on, you are able to put together a good life for your family. And I definitely know my generation, there's a real despair whether we'll ever get to the point where our parents are in terms of owning a house, you know, having a fully funded 401k, being Social Security being there when we retire, or Medicare being there one. There's a lot more of that we could, you know, lose it all. And I wonder if there's a older generation knows that their future is more secure, so they want moderate change versus big whole, you know, systematic change that Sanders has, and whether the overarching themes of the Sanders campaign are just too big. 1 billion this, 1.5 billion one. But there's also just general things about canceling student debt. As a person in student debt, I love that. If you get to your older 45, 60, when college was a lot cheaper than it is today, and a lot of people have spent the time paying off their loans and taking the hard decisions, does it look like it's a get out of jail free card for the younger generation? And I think that's a possibility of that. You know, we're taxed enough already. We already, you know, we can't sell a house. We want to move. And I wonder if just Bernie Sanders's messages are just too big for the older generation, that they don't think it's possible, which is a totally valid take on it, because they are big. But as a generation has come up in a time where they say the economy's better and it takes us, you know, forever to find a job, there's a lot of things that we're just not happy with how America is set up. And I wonder if the older generation doesn't have the same feel that America's not working for them like the younger generation did.
Yeah, I suppose a bit of a parallel in Britain would be used to be that generally one assumes one gets more conservative as you get older. And it used to be once you had a house, you had a house and a family, you turn more conservative. And the Tories used to talk in the 40s and 50s about, you know, a property owning democracy was what Anthony Eden talked about, One Nation Tories, like Harold Macmillan talked about. And that hasn't really happened anymore, which is why the age at which people are switching over from Labour to Tory started rising and rising and rising. Now I think it is 45 that it's switching over. And maybe there is a similar thing happening in America, where, as you say, that you've got younger generation can't get on the house. Is it similar to younger generation can't get on the housing market, hit with tuition fees, lots of ununionized work, low paid, insecure, and so they do want big changes?
Yes, there's a firmness. I think it's, I can't remember who said it. I want to say it was a Churchill or if it was Ronald Reagan, but you're liberal at age 20 because you have a heart. You're conservative at age 50 because you have a brain, or something along the lines of that. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to talk my example. I went to a state school, and I don't have large student debt, but, you know, there's a lot of people that are taking low-paid jobs or jobs that aren't really one because they have this large amount of student debt, which is integral. You know, we have had student debt and paying for schools at absurd rates for forever. The tuition fees is not really the same, like, thing for us. We're just expected it's going to cost us a lot of money. And, you know, in the American way is you want to get ahead and grow, you go to college. And then these people come out with these degrees and they can't find jobs. But I think there's just the rising cost of living. I have my sister commutes an hour and a half into the city every day because that's where her job's based. But they can't afford a house anywhere close to the city center. I think there's housing shortages that can go into that. I also think that there's a lot more of my generation that are working gig jobs and stuff that's ununionized and don't have really secure in terms of their health care. And I think that a lot of this younger generation doesn't feel that they're better off than 4 years ago or better off than 8 years ago. We were the hardest hit with the financial crisis because we hadn't secured a job and hadn't gotten the experience to get into the labor market. But they're just not coming out and voting at the numbers you need. Is he's talking to younger generation of that don't feel secure in their life and feel that, you know, they're not getting the same chance that their parents do. I think there's a lot of these people, a lot of the younger generation are transient. They may live in an apartment for 1 year, they move to another one, they're working two jobs, their busy life of just trying to put food in, just trying to keep having a little fun, paying their bills and stuff, really feel that it's going to get better. Because in all experiences, I'll tell you, between now and when I worked in politics, we'll say 2015 was the last time I fully worked in politics. I'm like every other American. I really just the news is just depressing, that there isn't really a chance that it's going to get any better. You know, I'm secure in my job, but I know a lot of people that their job's not going to be there in a year or 2 years. I mean, it might be a more example of New York than other states, but I think the older generation feel more secure in their future. And I think the way that I think I've heard it said, and I think it's a really good way, is that I'm willing to pay some to make the future, but I don't want to spend all of my money to make every tax goes up when I'm doing fine at this. It's kind of this incremental change versus systematic change. I think the older generation overwhelmingly want to be better. They're very good Democrats, but they also, there's just a differing viewpoint of what they're looking for. I think it's just a change in message. And it's really one of the reasons I think that Bernie, and I've favored for Bernie, is that he's talking to the issues that the younger person has, the student debt, the not having healthcare, the insecure work, housing, and what they want in their communities. You know, diverse communities, they don't want to drive everywhere. And they really like it and they're flocking to it because that's things that no one's been talking about up to Bernie Sanders in 2016. But that's only, it's not a majority of voters that have the same feeling. It's a very sizable minority. And the overwhelmingly, as in it's happening in Britain, we have a rapidly aging population, and the rapidly aging people that live in the same house, that know when to vote, that have the kind of their life put together, they know they vote on this day and they make a plan out of it, is not really the same thing that my generation really has. There's deep insecurities on it. And I think, you know, Bernie's message just isn't hitting people that are more secure in their life and Biden's promising thin reason, which older, more conservative Democrats and moderates can get along with instead of systematic change. That's the only way I can think of it.
Yeah, what you've been saying kind of reminds me of in the last election in Britain, there was a debate about, you know, the good that the EU does in terms of boost to GDP. And someone in the audience said, "That's not our GDP, that's your GDP." And that's sort of what that reminds me of, is that the economy that's happening on out there, actually, we're not seeing that benefit. That's someone else seeing that benefit.
The other thing, too, is I think there's a real fear among older Democrats that there's a real big fear around older Democrats that I don't think the idealistic younger have, which is they're afraid of losing it all with Trump. And they would rather keep what they have with small intermittent change than taking a chance on a Sanders and systematic change. That they don't think that, you know, they think that incremental changes and keeping what they currently have and making it better is a better electability thing than overarching systematic change.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also wonder, actually, we haven't talked about the Cold War angle as well. And maybe Sanders' recent comments about Fidel Castro probably didn't play well with older Democrats.
Yeah, and especially that's also going to be an interesting one when it comes to Florida's primary as well, given the large Cuban population there.
The question, though, with that is how many registered Democrats.
That is true.
But it will be a thing coming if he gets to the general. Absolutely.
On that note, we can finish thinking of Florida. There are worse things, I think. I suppose. I'm sure, given this damn primary is going to carry on till July, we'll definitely check in with you, Patrick, at some point before the primary finishes. In the meantime, we have a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Depper composed our theme tune, Pookie Good Times. Patreon.com/notenoughchampagne. We'll have a bonus episode out about whether Bernie Sanders can beat Donald Trump as well. I'm on Twitter @PaperbackRioter.
I'm @AcousticRadical.
I'm @PCook11. Come give me questions. I love talking about it and helping people understand our weird system.
Happy flossing.